Good morning. I'm Doug Rademacher, and I'm here with the Fisher Body Historical Team. We are going to interview George Nelson today. It is October 26th at approximately 9:20, and we are in the Labor Relations Conference Room in 2005. Good morning, George. Would you please state your full name and spell your last name for the record?
George Nelson, Jr., and last name spelled N-E-L-S-O-N.
Thank you. And what is your address?
16271 South Lowell Road.
What is your marital status?
Single.
Do you have any children?
Yep.
And that is?
I have two daughters. I have a 19-year-old and a 10-year-old.
That's wonderful. And do you have any education? What's your education?
No. High school, then everything GM can throw at me.
Excellent. Did you have any military service?
No.
Okay. We're going to go around the room and identify all the people in the room.
Doreen Howard.
Cheryl McQuaid.
John Fedewa.
Linda Johnson.
And I'm Doug Rademacher. Good morning to you. George, would you please tell us about hiring in? Give us your hire-in date and the department and shift in which you hired into.
It was August 29th, 78. They brought a bunch of us in. I put in two applications to get in here, and the lady that was going through the applications had both of them. Said, "You must have wanted in here bad." And I said, "Yep." So they brought us all into a big room, one of the conference rooms up here, and sat us down and divided us up into two groups. And the one group, they said, "You go to the armpit of Fisher Body." Oh, great, what's that? And that would be the body shop. They had us down in the body shop.
Okay, and tell me, what brought you to Fisher Body?
The money.
How did you hear about them hiring?
Oh, it was public knowledge. I was driving a semi at the time. It'd take a day off work or 2 days to stand in line. And the lines went all the way down over Linden. It was actually pretty neat.
Okay, so your first day in the plant, tell us about that.
They took us down in the body shop and asked, all right, they gave me a choice of hanging car doors or putting in a striker. I had no idea what a striker was, and to this day that was one of my biggest mistakes because I chose car doors because I thought, well, I know what a door is. It can't be that hard. Well, I was wrong. It was pretty heavy. They were Della 88 doors and 98 doors, and my buddy, he got the striker job, which was putting a striker in, which is nothing more than a large bolt with a ratchet and tapping it with a little bitty hammer. And he was right down the line from me, so I got to watch him do that 8 hours, 10 hours a day, whatever we were working. And I'm lifting doors that weighed about 75 pounds and hitting them with a big hammer with no lift assists or anything like that. Just pick them up, slam them on, bolt them on, beat them up.
And what was the plant called when you hired it?
Fisher Body.
Okay. Do you remember your starting wage?
Yep, $7.77 an hour.
That was a lucky day for you.
Yes, it was.
Been playing that ever since, or hoping to have it come up? Tell us about your boss and the union. How did they treat you on your first day in, and were you brought up to
back then? Yeah, well, it's still the same, but we don't do new hires too much anymore. But you had to get your 90 days in. So for your first 90 days, you were basically at their mercy. And it was a lot different than it is now, believe me. It was like you were a rookie, and you'd do what they tell you, and no matter how much work they put on you, you'd do it. And you couldn't miss no days, and you couldn't, you know, do anything, really. You just had to be here, so. But the union was around big time. I mean, you know, I used to watch them. They could, of course, couldn't represent us until we had our 90 days in, but they would be out on the floor fighting for workers' rights big time. But, and it was pretty much fighting back then, and a lot of yelling and stuff, and fist pounding on desks.
George, they hired a lot of people at that same time.
Oh, yeah.
Did you know other people that you stood in line with? You said your friend was right up in front of you.
Well, he just became my friend from getting hired in, but... No, actually, I really didn't recognize too many people. There was maybe a handful that I knew from high school that got hired in, you know. But people came from all over, Vermontville, Grand Rapids, Jackson, you know, stood in line.
in your work environment, tell me about how the atmosphere was on the assembly line. How did people treat each other?
It was really good. It was. We all got along, and it was. You got to know people a little more than what you do now because they have the jobs spaced out so much. Before, you were working, the minute you got done a car, somebody was right behind you doing something else. I mean, like, for instance, we had four people on each side of the line putting car doors on, and you rotated, did every fourth car, you know, so you had a ton of time. You were humping, but you had a ton of time.
Okay. Do you remember your first boss?
Yeah.
Tell us about him.
Sam Seitz. Yeah, he was ornery, let's put it that way. He was very ornery. And he loved to mess with new hires, you know. He'd be on his hard. Me and him never really saw eye to eye for a long, long time. I think all the way up till about the last year before he retired, then we got along.
So he took that, we'll call it the 90 days that you had to be more or less good. He took that beyond the 90 days?
No. He never changed. He was always the same from day one. I mean, he was just ornery, to put it politely. He wasn't a very happy individual, I don't think.
Talk about the older seniority people. How did they treat you?
Oh, like we were new hires. You know, they were good, but they'd mess with us a lot. But that was kind of, you know, now I look back on it because I've almost got 30 years in. I used to look at those guys that had 25, and I go, my God, they've been here 25. There's no way I'm going to do that, you know. Here it is. But, yeah, we used to, you know, really look up to them. And then they'd tell us about when they hired in and how hard it was, and, you know.
What was your plan when you hired in? Was it
actually, my plan was just to work for a few years and then move on to something different.
Doreen Howard?
When you hired in, was there any new hire pranks that they did to you? You said they messed with you.
Oh, yeah. There was you'd be bolting a car door on, and they had a guy called an intermittent relief guy, and he would give you bathroom breaks and stuff, and they would come walking around and dump water on you. You know, or hit you with a fire extinguisher, and you know, there was a lot more joking around that went on back then, and indulgences and whatnot constantly. But it was the auto industry of the 70s. I mean, that's the way it was. It was crazy. It was, you know, everything that you've pretty much heard about it was true. You know,
can you describe the environment of the body shop? What was it like,
it was
your surroundings?
Very loud, very dirty. I mean, when you got eight people banging on door hinges all pretty much at the same time, it's pretty loud. And then you had the jungle, which was all the spot welding operations. And everywhere you looked, you had welding cables hanging down and welding guns. I mean, far as you could see, which wasn't very far because it was always smoky. And lots of sparks and noise. And, I mean, it was gross down there. It really was.
Did you always work in the body shop?
Yep, I've always been there. Yep, since 78. Kind of got comfortable with it.
Linda Johnson?
You were talking about how noisy it was. Did they practice hearing protection back in the 70s?
No, not so much. I think that was more in the mid-80s. They really started pushing hearing protection and stuff like that. I mean, we had our physicals with hearing tests and whatnot, and then they also sampled you for lead because there was a lot of lead we were using on seams and stuff of cars back then, but nope.
And you were saying no door assist.
No door assist. No,
so
you
ergonomically,
reached in.
It
was bad. It was. I mean, you know, it made you strong. You know, it really did. I mean, you carrying doors all day long. You know, you're no slouch. By the end of the day, but I can remember going home and from the air guns. The first month that I worked, I'd wake up in the middle of the night and my hands would be closed right shut, cramped right shut, and I'd have to go to the bathroom, turn on hot water, and run them under there and straighten them out until your hands got built up and used to doing that.
How did that change over the time frame that you worked in the body shop?
Oh, a ton. They start shortly after I hired in, I want to say maybe the mid-80s, before we switched body styles, they brought in a fixture that we used on the doors, which clamped on, which made it a little easier because you still had to grab the doors and carry them, but you slid them on. Before, you had to kind of hang on to them and then bolt them on with the first bolt, and then the door would stay on, and then you'd do the rest, you know, freehand. But a lot more ergonomic things. Ergonomics started getting more involved, you know, and, I mean, they still had a ways to go. But from when I hired in to now, I mean, it's, you know, those people complain about hanging car doors. No, it ain't nothing, you know. Because you're using airlift assists now, and you swing them on, and there's hardly no effort to putting a car door on. It's all timing and getting your motor skills together.
Doug Rademacher. George, go back to the body shop. Tell me about, in the camaraderie that you developed in a particular area for that ornery boss you spoke of, did you guys work and help each other, or... were you left on your own?
Oh, no, we always helped each other. I mean, everybody that you worked with, you pretty much got along with. I mean, there was a few scuffles where people, you know, anytime you have that many people. And we used to work into the August month big time, and for some reason, I just remember it being hotter back then. Of course, hanging doors, you know, we didn't have the airflow we do now and whatnot. But, yeah, people got along good. We used to have, you'd have department softball. I mean, we had softball leagues. This place was so big and hired so many people. I mean, every department had their own softball team. There was a schedule. You know, they rented city parks. And, I mean, that was a lot of fun. That was a lot of fun.
You were afforded breaks according to the union contract.
Oh, yeah.
Talk about...
I remember when I hired in and they told you, I forget the exact times they were, but you had like a 12-minute break, a 14-minute break, and a 16-minute break and stuff like that. And then you had your lunch, you know, but they had a break they called a wagon. And they said, that's 7 minutes. I looked at them and I was like, right, what are you going to do in 7 minutes? But I tell you what, after 2 hours on that line hanging car doors, you look forward to 7 minutes of that line stopping big time. And a little lady would come around with a cart with... they'd always have coffee and donuts and, you know, honey buns and all that kind of stuff on there. And I'm telling you, you'd be looking down that aisleway looking for that cart, you know.
So if you didn't have a clock, the cart told you
what was coming. You knew what was going on. And we used to have to use actual time cards, you know, the paper time cards over by the escalator in the body shop. And everybody stand in line at the end of the day to punch out, you know.
Early on, George, did you, when the break would come and you... did you find yourself still working and other people were all gone?
Oh, yeah. I'd do that. And then when I first hired in, I wouldn't leave because I couldn't find my way. I had to follow people out to the parking lot because there was so many departments and so much stuff. I mean, it took you a good couple weeks to figure it out, you know. But I'd sit on a stack of bolts, you know, boxes of bolts, and just wait for the break to get over and then go back to work. Because you didn't want to go anywhere. You'd never get back. And people wouldn't really help you out. Yeah, it's over there. They'd point, and you're like, going, okay. And then they'd just laugh because they know you were lost, you know.
Was it, you said that you made the big mistake of choosing doors over strikers. Talk about going, being led down to the body shop. What was your first impression?
Oh, I was like, I just thought, oh, my God, what'd I get into? Because, I mean, it was just huge. And, I mean, I like doing that kind of work anyway, but I was going, oh, man. I mean, there was people everywhere. And it was like you see in those prison movies, you know, when somebody comes walking in and everybody stares at them, same deal here. You come walking down, because they'd lead 10 of us down there, you know, and everybody's going, woo, and hollering. I mean, a woman couldn't walk by in the body shop. There was no way. That whole place would come. You could always tell if a woman was coming by. I mean, all the way down to the other end of the body shop, you'd hear the hollering and the cat calls. Lots changed. Now you get fired, you know.
What did you do on your lunch break, George?
At the start, I just stayed right there. I'd take lunch like a good boy, you know. And then as the years rolled on, you got a bunch of friends, everybody book over to the Shop Stop Bar. And you'd stay over there as long as you could and drink as much as you could, and then you'd hurry back and hang car doors as best as you could.
You know? Do you remember how long was lunch when you first hired in?
I think it was, it's always been half hour. I'm almost sure.
Doreen Howard?
you touched base on the women in the body shop. When you hired in, was there very many women at that time?
Actually, if you could not bear children, they would let you work down there because of the lead. Yeah.
So there was very few women then.
Right. So that would explain why the men and the women happened to walk through. I mean, you could still walk through the body shop. They just didn't want you working in with the lead and stuff. So it was mainly men.
When did that change?
When we got rid of the lead. Yeah. Because we went to silicon bronze and stuff, and then they started having more women in the body shop.
So that was at the end of the cups?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was. Yeah, I think it was when we started the GMX 130s.
What's a GMX
130? Oh, a GMX 130, that's an old Cutlass Clay. That's when we downsized big time. And a Grand Ams, and we downsized. We went from building big cars to little mini cars. That was just enjoyable when you're talking about hand car doors, because they were a lot lighter.
Doreen Howard.
What was the reception for women? And I'm not sure, was there a lot of minorities at that time in the body shop?
Yep. Okay. Yeah. There really was. Everybody got along. I mean, for the most part, there really wasn't a whole lot of, we don't want women down here, But when it came to, hanging car doors, I can't really remember ever having women hang car doors when I hung them. It was just you just couldn't do it, you had to be a big guy. Everybody that hung car doors was pretty much big guys.
Did you always hang doors?
I hung doors for a long time, for probably, I think I did that job for 3-4 years. And then I got a relief job, which is giving people their breaks throughout the day. And I still wasn't doing doors, but I also had to go over to other departments of metal finish or the grinding booths where they grind metal flanges. But that's pretty much it. Just stayed right in the body shop area. I've done pretty much everything in the body shops. But
George, do you have any other family members that worked here?
No.
What was your first reaction when the time came where they discontinued being Fisher Body and brought in the new nameplate for the plant? Did that mean anything at all to you?
Oh, yeah, we didn't like it. We didn't like it. We thought that was the beginning of the end, and same way when we got rid of the big car, all the old-timers all said, that's it. We get rid of these. These have been our bread and butter forever, and we get rid of them, we're done. Well, Grand Am proved them wrong. That car sold like crazy.
So when they got done now building the Grand Am, what was the perception when they went from BOC, Buick's Cadillac Group, to the Lansing Car Assembly?
Everybody pretty much had it with the way they changed the names and just became letters and, the acronyms. They're just hung up on those. I don't get that whole thing. But everybody was like, you got to be kidding me. Every time we turned around, they were changing the sign out on Michigan Avenue.
Doreen Howard.
So, what was the general perception of the people that you worked with for the name changes? How did they feel about
it? They got to the point where it was just pretty much a joke. I mean, they were like, oh, they changed the name again. Must be tax purposes or something,
What do you call the building, and what did other people in
the
area?
We still call it Fisher Body. I mean, anybody that hired anyone was Fisher Body, it's always Fisher Body. Or the big green building for people. If you're talking to somebody young and they don't know Fisher Body, you just say the big green building over there.
George, you said you had a ornery supervisor when you hired him. Did you ever have any good supervisors?
Yes. Oh, I've had a bunch of them. I had one, Dick Dowler. He was old as the hills when I hired him, but I'll never forget. Deer season come around, and I don't think I'd quite had my 90 days in. I was getting real close to having him in, and everybody was asking for opening day off, And I told him if he let me out that night, I'd go hunting opening day, and I'd bring him a roast back for second shift. And he let me go home, and man, there were some hot old-timers, big time. But I ended up driving all the way up to Holden Lake that night, ended up taking a deer, and I brought him a roast and stuck it on his front porch before I went to work. So, yeah, it worked out pretty good. But, yep, I've had a ton. Actually, I've had more good ones than bad ones. The people here are really good. I mean, that's one thing that I'll always remember about this place is, you know, the friends you've made. And, you know, even I usually get along with management anyway, unless they don't pay me, then we have issues.
Okay. Doreen Howard?
You started to touch base on the friendships and the people that are here. Can you go into more detail? Do you have friends that you do things in the plant with, outside the plant?
Yeah, all the time. I do a lot of hunting with guys from here, snowmobiling from guys from here, boating. I mean, you know, we all get together and hang out, you know, and have cottages at similar places, and, you know.
So you feel that the people here are family and friends?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Did you get involved in any of the lunchtime activities that you have? And any of the lunchtime activities, such as the dinners or retirement parties or any of that kind of stuff?
Yep. And as the years went on, I mean, they've always been really big. Anytime, you know, somebody's retiring, or they were even doing them for birthdays and stuff like that, or just when the holidays come around, they'll have, you know, the big Thanksgiving dinners and Christmas dinners, and I mean, you know, people here eat well.
Cheryl McQuaid.
How was that arranged? I mean, who took care of making sure that dinner happened?
Usually, if there was a female in one of our groups, she would be the organizer. That's usually how that would work.
And organizer meaning?
Just they would have a sheet of paper and, hey, sign up. They'd take it and pass it around. Sign up. What are you bringing in? You know.
So it was like a potluck type basis?
Yep.
Doreen Howard.
Was there any other times where the people of the area came together as a group or a family to support one of the coworkers?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Anytime somebody lost somebody, the collections were big. I mean, you know, you could, if you lost somebody and you were liked, there'd be a collection that would pretty much amaze you. You know, the people are really giving. I mean, and they're, you know, they care about each other. They really do, you know.
So they would collect, they would go from person to person collecting money?
Yep. They'd have a card for you to sign, and then if you wanted to get, it wasn't mandatory that you gave money, you know, but everybody usually threw in a couple bucks, and when you're talking in a department of average size of 45 people, you know, that's a lot of money.
George? Has a particular coworker impacted your personal life?
Just you, Doug. No, not really.
I'm sure there's many, but would you please, what's your best memory of the Fisher Body Clan?
Oh, God, you're right, there's a ton of them. I can't really.
Can you give one good time?
I can give one. I'm loose jointed in my arms. And there's a supervisor that I had, Rufus Hudson, and anybody that knew Rufus, he's a big gambler, and he was a motorcycle racer, and we used to drive these three-wheeled scooters around, the supervisors had them. Well, one day, we were all getting pretty bored, so I said, watch this, and I slammed the car door real hard, and he was looking the other direction, and I popped my arm out, so it looked like it was broke. I said, Roof, look at this, and he freaked out. Get on the back of the cart. He jumped on this cart. I mean, it's totally unsafe, so don't do this at home. But he sat there and drove me all the way down the assembly line, all the way down to medical. And, I mean, the whole line knew what was going on, and they were rolling. And he was all serious about his driving and going fast as he could. And we get down to medical. I said, oh, man, pop back in. He goes, oh, good. And it took me back. But, I mean, watching his face, he was a trip. In the water extinguisher fights in the summer, you know, you'd take those fire extinguishers and it'd get out of hand.
Have you had a skilled tradesperson ever do something special for you? Did you have something you ever needed that you were able to?
Oh, yeah. Leave it at that. No,
no,
I had. back in the day, if you needed anything built, and they used to call them government jobs, and as a matter of fact, most of our skilled trades would be working at government jobs as opposed to working at regular jobs. And, I mean, you could get all kinds of stuff built. And those guys are great. But nowadays you can't do it so much. But, yeah, used to have some pretty neat things assembled.
Did you have a locker or something special made for you?
Oh, yes. We'd have special lockers made, bow presses for your compound bows, things for your car. If something broke and you needed a special part made for it, they could fabricate pretty much anything.
Let's talk about your union a little bit. Did you attend union meetings?
Yes.
How has your union involvement changed over the years?
Immensely. I've been blessed with getting a good job through them. Hope it continues. But they supported you, and there's lots of opportunities within the union out there. And anytime you're involved with it and, you care about the people, you got opportunities out there for you. So,
did you see the union change in the way they do business?
Oh, yeah, big time. When I first hired in, it was definitely a war between union and management, and now it's not at all, really.
Lansing's been known for quality and productivity.
Mm-hmm.
Can you connect that to something? What would be the reason for that?
We want to be number one. I mean, people in this town care about building cars, and they always have, and, no matter what anybody says, we build good cars. I mean, the only time they were limited on what we were doing is when the materials we were given weren't superior, and, you had to get by with what they were giving you and make the best out of a bad situation. But the whole auto industry back in the 70s went through that. I mean, you had cars, if anybody bought a car made in the 70s, how fast they rusted out and the paint peeled off and everything else. But now, quality is definitely number one.
Have you voted in the union and political elections?
Yes.
Did you participate in any of the political or social activities with supporting the union?
Oh, yes.
Did you? With your job, are you required to do any particular community service? And what are some of the things that you
do? I'm not really required to do it, but I do, We did the river cleanup years ago. We did all kinds of stuff. Just
Doreen Howard.
You touched base on your job. What is your current job?
Right now, I am a safety support for the Delta Plot Body Shop. I was safety advisor for 18 years for the body shop.
What does that entail? What
is it? Basically, making sure any safety calls that the employees have, they'll put in a safety call. I'm kind of like a committee man for safety. I do safety tours once a week, follow-up tours, make sure that everybody's up to date on all their safety classes. Just anything related to safety, that would have been me.
And when did you start in that arena?
18 years ago, so whatever it is.
It's been a long time.
Yeah.
Cheryl McQuaid.
George, you said you hired in on second shift. Did you ever work the day shift?
Yeah, I worked the day shift for 6 months, and about the time I got used to it, I got bumped back to nights. I'm on day shift currently.
Did you notice any differences between those shifts when you first hired in?
Yeah, day shift people, they don't wake up until probably after lunch. That was the big standard. Back then, you could read a paper while you're doing the job and everything. And when I first went to days, I learned real quick, you didn't really talk to anybody too much in the morning. Everybody just kind of did their job, but after lunch, it was on big time. A day shift was fun. I liked them both, I did lots of breakfast burritos on day shift.
Where did you get the breakfast burritos?
There was a guy named Val. He used to bring them in all the time into the body shop and sell them.
Did he walk the line with them?
Sometimes, yeah, because he had a pretty good job, so he could kind of cruise around. But everybody knew where he was located, and they'd always come over and got to where he'd sell out in the first hour anyway.
Doreen Howard?
Was there other people that was in the body shop that brought in other things?
We used to have our own little stores. Yeah, there'd be guys, there was a guy named Hawk, and he had a huge store over in the metal finish area, and I mean, he sold everything, combs, shampoo. I mean, this guy had everything. He had a locker special built by skilled trades guys, and it was loaded with anything, basically anything you wanted. You go over there, and you could buy it.
Is there other food items that people...
Oh, yeah, they'd bring in everything. I mean, they'd bring in everything from a roast pig to, I mean, anything you think of, people bring in and sell.
Linda Johnson.
You had mentioned, George, that you hunt, and your co-workers probably.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever have meals where everybody brought in their best item? You know, you might bring in, could you tell me about that?
Yeah. We used to have an intermittent relief guy named Ike Kinsey, and that man was the best cook you could find anywhere. And a couple times I'd be out hunting during the day working second shift, and I'd shoot a deer, and I'd just cut off the whole hind quarter and walk in with a deer leg right past security and lay it on the table, and he'd cut it up and cook it. You know, it was hilarious. We used to have a good time, but yeah, all the time we'd have meals like that, pretty much every Friday for sure.
Doreen Howard.
Did that change over time?
Yeah, they start, the meals you could still do, but they started, you know, they didn't want you to have them every week, and you know, then they came out with notices that you could only have them for retirement parties and everything. But, I mean, it's like anything else. You know, people go, yep, okay, we won't, and then they still do. So,
how did they cook the beef? You said you brought in
we had stoves, skillets, crock pots, whole nine yards.
Some regular old
kitchen. Oh, yeah, for sure. It was easy, you know. It was a good time.
George. John Fedewax.
George, you'd back up a little bit here. You talked about the current job you have right now. How did you become to the position you have? Was it posted? Was it?
Actually, we had an election, and that's how they used to do safety advisors when I got back on. All the safety team members, you know, if we had the original safety advisor was getting bumped to a different department, and so we had an election, and I won, and just kept the job ever since.
Okay.
Doreen Howard.
You talked about safety advisors. So there's more than one?
Right. Each department, back in the day, each department had, we had two lines. We had an A and a B line, and each line would have an advisor for each department. So there'd be two on second shift, two on first shift. And as time went on and they started getting leaner, they cut it down to one to cover both body shop. And then they'd have one for the paint shops and one for the trim.
And I guess, as the safety advisor, what was your responsibility to the employees, and what's your responsibility as far as what management expected from you for that position?
Just basically what I said before, doing the tours. You did the weekly tours, and then that involves you pick an area. And back then, you'd have like 7-8 areas in a body shop, and you'd do a couple a week, and you'd go through and do a tour and address all the items that you found. And the expectations were the same for management as they were for the people on the floor. But then I'd have to go out and help people when they had a concern, like say a supervisor's trying to make them do something unsafe. You know, or they got a fan that's broken, or they got a safety mat that's not working, they would call me out, and then I'd take care of going around getting the proper people to fix it.
George, is there a particular incident that you hold dear to your heart that that you were involved with in your safety position where you may have helped or saved somebody?
I didn't save him, but we had a guy that passed away out in building 23, and we had to do CPR on him, and that was really rough, because I'm part of the ERT, emergency response team, and we probably get called out on a lot of potential heart attacks, you know, and 90% of the time a person isn't having a heart attack, but this time we rolled up and he was laying there in purple and everything, and it was really rough, because before that I had never done CPR on anybody, and it's nothing like doing it on the house. I'll tell you, not a thing, I'm close. But, yeah, I'll never forget that. And the family came in and thanked us at a big thing where they wanted to thank us for doing all we could. And, I mean, it was tough. There was a lot of tears. We met in this room right here and had a debriefing on it right afterwards. And I tell you what, that was rough. That was real tough. And I didn't even know the guy. I mean, you know, I'd never seen him before, but it was nothing I want to do again real soon, I know that. That was probably 8 years ago.
You've been here with the safety group for 18 years. How many members have passed away under your position?
While we're working, you're talking on the job passing
that
on?
You know of, yeah.
Actually, I think he's pretty much the only one I know that lost his life that I was involved with. Majority of the calls we get are lacerations and whatnot, and you get people out pretty quick with that.
Tell me, you have enjoyed, you said, good wages, and there's a bargained benefit package secured for you by the International Union. Can you tell us, what is your most appreciated bargain benefit?
Bargain benefit. My most appreciated. I appreciate them all. I mean, you know, to be quite honest, I do. I mean, we got it. As far as that, anywhere else in the United States, we've got great, you know, insurance. We've got great benefits. We, you know, you just don't find them anywhere else. Of course, they're trying to change that, but you know, we do. We got the best going. I mean, you know, anybody you talk to doesn't pay for any of that stuff, and we end up, I mean, they pay for it and we don't, you know, so you can't beat it.
Did you ever take the opportunity to use your tuition assistance?
Yep. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Several times.
That was just to further your enhance your own life, or was
it
your position?
Yeah. I took several of the classes that they offered, and then back in the day I took the ones where we you could actually get like a generator or a GPS and stuff like that, and went to class, you know, and ended up purchasing those from them for extreme discount, and those were great. Wish they still had them.
With community activities, has your job and your skills carried over outside of
every now and then I'll go to my daughter's school, whatever school she's going to at the time, and do presentations on safety and fire safety and stuff like that. I don't take over for fire chief or nothing, but, you know, just talk to the kids about it and whatnot. And anytime I go on a field trip where it's an overnight thing, I let them know I'm all, you know, CPR certified and all that, and first aid certified in case somebody gets hurt. It's come in handy at dance things, like when a girl broke her arm, you know, stuff like that. So it works.
What's your thought about moving to this new Delta plant and the closing? I guess first, well, what's the thought of the closing of the fishery?
The closing's sad. Anybody that's worked here as long as I have, and you know, or even close, you know, and you walk around this building now, and it's just sad because you know, there's no voices out there. You can walk around the whole plant, and there's nothing going on. You know, it's just weird. It really is. And what was weird was when they cut out one line too. You know, and we were still working, and all of a sudden, boom, one line's gone. Then reality's starting to set in. You know, I mean, our future's uncertain. Even with a new plant, it's uncertain. You know, more so now than ever, and it's just. That's weird. I'm excited about the new plant, but I'm apprehensive too, you know, because you're like going, we've been here and been safe, you know, and now we're going out to a new plant that who's to say they can't pull the plug on, you know, at any time they want. I mean, everybody's talking all, yeah, this is all for sure, but, you know, you watch the news, you don't got to be an Einstein to figure it out, you know.
George, I want to run back. Since you've taken in on the safety position, would you share a story about some of the things? There used to be the old Fisher body. They've built roofs over roofs. They've got different things that a lot of the average person would never even see in their lifetime. Share something that you've seen here that you didn't even know existed before you got it.
Well, I can tell you a real good one. We were doing something in the men's locker room. I can't even remember what it was. And we happened to look down at where one of the benches was bolted to the floor. And we lifted that up, and there's a secret stairwell underneath it. It was wild. And so, of course, we went down there. And when we got down in there, there were all these tables where whatever they did during the World War, I think they built munitions or something in here or whatever. But, I mean, there are steel tables. I mean, big as these here down underneath that locker room. And it was really neat. Old wooden tables laying around, and old whiskey bottle was down there, and that was neat. I liked that. That was cool.
How big was this room?
Oh God, it was probably 100 feet long and maybe 40 feet, 50 feet wide. It was a pretty good sized room.
And it's underground and underground
in the middle of nowhere. Yeah.
Are there tunnels also in this plant?
Not in that one. There's tunnels in this plant. I've been in several of the tunnels doing ERT things, and those are pretty neat and creepy and, you know, old. But, yeah, they connect us with the Genesis plant. And used to be you could go a lot further, but they made blocks in them. But you can go quite a ways underground around here. And I heard rumors that there used to be a tunnel that went across the street to Harry's, too, but I don't know if that's...
And what is Harry's?
Harry's is the local bar right across the street on Berlinden, and I'm pretty sure that's a true story, but...
Doreen Howard.
The tunnels, do you have any idea what they used those for and why they were built?
The tunnels I was talking about, we have steam lines and whatnot that run from plant to plant that are underneath, and I don't know how long they've been there, but they're old.
And
you know, and the other one going to Harry's, well, that's just to get to Harry's.
The steam lines, they were used because there was only the one powerhouse that...
Right.
That
we supplied our own power, and they supplied it for all the facilities around here, so...
Could you please talk about that? Were you ever... the coal pipe and the... the feeding system for that, can you talk anything about that?
We had large quantities of coal, because that's what they used to heat the plant and do the steam and do the power, and it's just, you have to see it. I don't even think I could describe how big the coal pile was. It was huge. They had a front-end loader that would come in and pick the coal up and take it out to the powerhouse, and they had all these chutes, and occasionally they'd get fires in there. And I remember when we were first on the ERT, we had a fire there, and we weren't very knowledgeable. I mean, we were just kind of fire extinguisher people, and we went out to put out coal fire, you know, which you don't do. You just let coal fires burn, because you can't really put them out. And I remember I was standing in the coal pile, and Bob Fell, who's not very big, he was hanging on to my lifeline. I'm thinking, I weigh him by 100 pounds, and he's got me. And we're in this coal pile. Well, coal piles have air pockets in them. They're very dangerous. You shouldn't even be out in them, right? I mean, and I had no idea how deep this funnel was that fed all the ovens, right? Well, they're like 40 feet. And I'm at the top of this thing, and I was glad to get out of that one without getting hurt, because after we started debriefing and talking about it, people were like, you know how big those are? And we went out and looked at them, and I went, oh, my God, I should have never been there, you know? But Bob would have got rope burns going, uh-oh, you know.
Well, George, you've put a lot of years in. What would you say to people that we had a hiring group in about 95? So we have a lot of people that just came in with about 10 years of seniority. What would you say to somebody that's just getting started in the auto industry, or what would be your recommendation to people?
My biggest thing with the newer hires that we have is just respect what's been laid out before you, you know, what people have fought for. Because quite a few of them, I was involved with orientation of new hires and whatnot, and there was a definite trend that once they got their 90 days in, that they thought the job was owed to them, and nobody's owed a job. You know, you got to earn it. And a lot of that mentality is gone away. You know, people think, oh, I'm in here, I'm in the union, they owe me this, you know. And union and all that can go away in a blink of an eye, and you're going to be out there with everybody else, so you need to appreciate what you have.
Is there anything that you would like to share that I haven't asked you today?
Just, I'm really glad I met you, Doug.
Well, it's been a pleasure meeting you too, George. We appreciate your interview today.
Thank you, George.
Thank you, George.
Thank you.
You guys have a good